Hey guys, and welcome to the Animal Training Academy podcast show. I'm your host, Ryan Cartledge, and I'm really excited that you have decided to take time out of your busy schedules to come and hang out today. We're really grateful for you tuning in. And if you have been listening to the podcast for a while, we really appreciate this. Thank you so much. Hopefully you have subscribed so that you never miss an episode. But if not, or if you are new to the show, get yourself over to iTunes, Stitcher, animaltrainingacademy.com, or whatever it is you're listening to this podcast on, and hit the subscribe button to make sure you don't miss a single episode. We are bringing you today's episode on behalf of the Animal Training Academy, or ATA, membership. If you like the conversations in these podcasts, then I want to invite you to continue them with like-minded people within the ATA membership area, which you can find out more about over on the ATA website. Within the membership, you can get access to twice monthly live web classes, the back catalogue of previous web classes, plus a huge library of videos and projects to problem solve different training situations. And we're a sociable bunch, with an exclusive private Facebook group, forums area, and WhatsApp chat groups. It's like a Netflix social media platform for animal behaviour nerds. But we will get started on today's episode, where we'll be talking to one, Joan Orr. Joan is a scientist and internationally recognized clicker trainer. Along with Teresa McKeon, Joan is one of the co-founders of Tag Teach International, a company that promotes the application of marker-based positive reinforcement training for humans. Joan was a member of the Karen Pryor Clicker Training Clicker Expo faculty for 9 years and content creator and advisor to the Karen Pryor Academy for Animal Training and Behavior. Joan is a pioneer in the field of clicker training rabbits and co-author of a book on the subject. Joan and Teresa Lewin are co-founders of Dog Gone Crazy Incorporated, a company dedicated to dog bite prevention through education. Together, they created the board game Dog Gone Crazy, the doggy detective bite prevention education program for elementary school children, and the Clicker Puppy Training DVD. Joan has published many articles on dog bite prevention, positive training methods, and the importance of understanding dog body language, and she has received many awards for her work. Most recently, Joan has teamed up with behavior analyst, past podcast guest, Ryan O'Donnell, to put on the annual conference, The Convergence of Human and Animal Training and Technology. So without further ado, it's my very great pleasure to welcome one, Joan Orr, to the show today, who is patiently waiting by. Joan, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Doing well, thank you, Joan, and thank you so much for taking time to come and hang out with us at Animal Training Academy. We really appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure.
Let's dive straight in today, Joan, and get started. Could you please take everyone listening back to where you first got started, where you first learned about positive reinforcement training, and share some stories from that early time?
Well, the first thing I found out about positive training was from Karen Pryor. I had a dog that was very, very difficult, running away and squeezing through the fence and causing us all sorts of trouble. And I was looking at a magazine, a Dogs in Canada magazine, and I saw a list of books, and one was Don't Shoot the Dog. And I thought, that is what I need, because this dog is so much trouble. So I got the book and I read it, and I realized it's not a dog training book. It's an everything training book. It's the principles of training distilled into something that the average person can understand and apply. So I read that book and I realized, wow, this will apply to raising my kids. And I had a baby at the time. And so I applied all those principles to the baby and the dog. Started training the dog with treats instead of with punishment. And it was just so magical that that was just sort of how I started doing everything. It just sort of changed the way that I thought.
And so continue us now on your journey. So that was when you first got started, and then you started training your dog, started working the same principles from the book with your children. And then what kind of happened next that kind of put you on the path to where you are today?
Well, then eventually I lost that dog, got another dog, and started taking it to puppy classes. And I had found a positive reinforcement-based trainer here in my town, whose name is Teresa Lewin. And she taught me about how to get the behavior first and then put a cue So that was another novel concept to me. So instead of saying sit and pushing the dog down and sit and pushing the dog down, and then eventually he understands it, you know, she would use a treat to get the dog to sit. And then after the dog was offering the sit, then we would add the cue. And so that was another sort of mind-blowing thing to me, that, you know, let's get the behavior before we give it the name. So that went on for a while. And then she wasn't running a class over Christmas, I think. So I went to another trainer because I just wanted to keep training. And this lady used clicker training. And then I was just astonished because, you know, our training just jumped in a matter of weeks hugely. So I went back to Teresa and I said, we have to do this. So by that time, I was kind of helping her out with some of her classes because I was so interested in training. And she tried it and we just switched all the classes immediately, changed the curriculum, went to clicker training. And it was just incredible. You know, everybody just learned faster and we were able to teach different things and new things and more things. Everyone was getting more success. Teresa started using it with her aggressive dog, which I didn't really have anything to do with, but she has a lot of clients with aggressive dogs, and she started using the clicker with that training and had magical results there. And then I think the next thing, I got involved with Tag Teach with Teresa McKeon, and Karen Pryor actually came to my house, which was amazing, because we were going to go and visit some golfers and show them about Tag Teach. And I had been training these puppies that got dumped on me for 2 weeks, these three German Shepherd puppies. They were savage. And they needed, they just wanted to bite you. I think they were 7 weeks old. So I started using a clicker with them. And I'm on crutches, or sometimes I use a wheelchair. So I can't really run after the puppies or run after the kids. So being able to use the marker and teach from a distance was incredible for me. So we trained these puppies and videotaped a lot of it. And I showed it to Karen and she said, you know, you have to make a DVD. You have to show this to people. So we videotaped some other puppies and we made the clicker puppy DVD. So that was kind of how I sort of came on the clicker training scene in public, was with the clicker puppy training DVD.
So walk us through this a little bit more. So where did you meet Teresa McKeon? How did that come about? And you said there very casually that Karen Pryor came to your house and saw your DVDs and said, this is a huge deal. Let's make, I'm sorry, saw your videos and then suggested you make DVDs. How did all of this come about? That I imagine was quite a compliment to have, well, firstly, Karen come to your house, but secondly, for her to say, this is awesome. Let's create content around what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure. It was amazing. Well, how it started was, again, with the clicker training. After doing it for a while, I thought, wow, this would work with people as well. And I mean, I had been teaching my kids with positive reinforcement, but not with the marker. And so I had the idea because my one of my daughter's teachers was a coach for kids with Down syndrome and other intellectual delays in Special Olympics. So I thought this would really work with these Special Olympics kids because a lot of them are either low verbal or nonverbal and they don't respond well to lots of instructions, and they already use positive based kinds of training teaching. So I suggested it to the teacher and she said, yeah, let's try it. And I thought, well, you know, maybe we should try it on the typical kids first and make sure it actually works. So I sent Karen Pryor an email. I didn't know her, had nothing to do with her, but I sent her an email anyway saying, do you know of anybody who's doing this with gymnasts? I thought somebody must be. And she wrote me back, and I was amazed to get a response back from Karen and thrilled. And she said, yeah, somebody had posted something on one of our listservs. Let me connect you. And it turned out it was Teresa McKeon, and she had posted about using clickers with her gymnast. So I contacted her, and we got together, and we started doing more and more sophisticated types of training with her gymnast. It worked so well that we started right away, you know, within a couple of weeks of her starting this little program that we made with her kids. We started doing it here, and me and my kids started going down to the Oakville Butterflies Special Olympics and teaching with the clicker with the Special Olympics kids. And they just loved it. It was amazing. At first we said to them, you know, here is what we're going to do. When you hear the sound of the tag, and you did it right, and you're going to get a bead. So every time they got a tag, which is the same as a click, they got a bead in a cup. And then at the end, we were going to give them string and they could make something. So we explained it to them that someone would collect the beads for them. And then at the end, they would get to make something with the beads. So we started off and it worked really, really well. It was amazing. And the kids just loved it. And the parents were astonished. And then at the end, we gave them their beads and they're like, well, what are these for? They made no connection between the beads and the tags, even though we had explained that that's what we were going to do. And they're all nodding, yes, we understand. Of course, no, they didn't understand. But what they did understand was tag meant, yes, you got it right. So even though they weren't getting any kind of a primary reinforcer, they were just getting the tag, they still improved and they still really liked it. And they caught on to it immediately. You know, they didn't need a ton of explanation of why we're doing this and what this is. So then from then on, we didn't really need to give them anything. We just used the tag. So what is reinforcing to them is success. You know, success is the ultimate reinforcer for anybody. So once they understand that the tag means yes, that was right. And there's no buts. There's no better buts in tag teach. So we don't say that was right, but next time I want you to point your toes, or next time I want you to put your hand up more. The only thing that they get reinforced for is the exact tag point that we're working on. So they understood that very well, and they understood that then no one was going to correct them. So they really liked that they were going to get an absolute yes, that was right. No full stop.
And then so you implemented this. Do you have any stories that stick out from that time? Any particular kids or any favorite things that happened?
One of the highlights was Teresa came. Teresa came up and she came down with us to the Special Olympics group and did one of her Teresa things. I don't know if you've met Teresa yet, but Teresa's high energy and tons of fun and makes everything into a game. So she came down and we did a bunch of tag teach with exercises and games with the kids, and they were all tagging each other. That was a ton of fun. They just absolutely loved her. And I think that athletes wise, two of them stand out. One of them was one who cried all the time, not when we were there so much, but apparently in the past, and was very, very sensitive and didn't want to ever try any new things. And once we started the tagging with her, she started smiling and asking the coach to watch her and participating more. So that was one of the, you know, big successes for us. And then the other one is one of the coach's daughters who went to Special Olympics in Beijing. I can't remember how long ago that was, but she won 5 gold medals. So she won every single gold medal, one for every apparatus and overall. So that was a huge, you know, win for everybody. And her mom used the tagging with her. Not as much as probably we would have used it, but more when she was having a problem and something wasn't really working, then she would turn to the tag teach to solve it. So that worked out really well. And it's a mother and daughter thing, so there can always be conflict when you're trying to deal with your own kid. So this is a great way to take all the emotion out of the training, because the tagger makes one sound and it doesn't convey any emotion. So you can be annoyed or you can be happy and the tag sounds the same. So that's with parents and kids, it's, you know, it's a good way to take that possible piece of conflict out of the teaching.
And so with the kid that was crying and you started using tag teach and you noticed a big change in behavior, I think myself and the people listening to the show can start to think about why that was occurring. But I'd love to hear in your words, what do you think it was about tag teach and her experience that led to that massive shift?
I think it's because we always set the learners up to succeed. So she started being able to win, you know, every time, you know, and win like 10 times in a minute. Whereas the way that they're normally coached, they're still trying to be nice to them, but there's a lot of correction. You know, so as soon as you get something right, then they make it harder and then you have to do something else that's a little bit, you know, more of a challenge. And then as soon as you get that right, you have to do something even harder. And then, it, you know, it just keeps getting harder and harder and harder until you can't do it anymore. And the way that tag teach works is we set the scenario up so the student will succeed, you know, 90% or 100% of the time. And then we make it slightly harder and slightly harder, and we never take big jumps. And there's no pressure on, like, what's the next thing and what's the next thing and what's the next thing. You're only worried about the actual one thing that you're doing this time. And I think for these athletes in particular, it just takes a lot of the anxiety out of the equation. So they know they only have to worry about pretty hands. You know, if they do pretty hands, they get a tag, and they don't have to worry about what their feet are doing or what anything else is doing. So it's just a freedom to only concentrate on one thing. I think that's why everybody likes it. But these athletes in particular, you know, are very stressed by having to think about more than one thing at a time.
I'm very stressed by having to think about more than one thing at a time. So I can appreciate that. And you said, I mean, it was quite a serendipitous kind of series of events, really, that seemed to lead to all of this being set up. You said you didn't know Karen, and you just sent her an email anyway. And you said it quite casually, as you did about her coming to your house and liking your DVDs. For those listening to this, it might seem like, you know, that was they were really huge events. And I was just wondering to help people listen to this show, because, I mean, I guess when you sent that email, there was no way to know what would come out of that. But what advice can you give to people about the serendipity of that? I hope this question makes sense. But just, you know, just to get in contact with people, even if you don't know them, how important has that been in your journey?
Oh, that's been super important. You know, and I think that people who, you know, when sort of lucky things happen to people, I think a lot of it is because of the opportunity comes and then the lucky people jump on those and do something. And the unlucky people, you know, let it go by or maybe don't take advantage of an opportunity that comes. So I think anytime there's any opportunity to do something different or do something interesting or talk to somebody, you know, just do it. What's the worst that can happen? You know, if Karen didn't reply to my email, I'd like, oh, well, I would have found another way. You know, Teresa and I probably would have found each other eventually. But, you know, I know now if Karen is one of the most generous people I've ever met. You know, she just wants to share what she knows and share her gifts. And I think actually most people are like that when it comes right down to it. You know, I love it when people send me emails and ask me questions. And sometimes I'm surprised and sometimes I'm happy. But, you know, for the most part, you know, it's great when a new person sends me an email and wants to do something. Like just the other day, yesterday, in fact, this lady, Nikki, who's a speech pathologist, a PhD speech pathologist, in fact, sent me an email and said, oh, I'm so excited about Tag Teach. It took your free online training and I loved it. And I'm going to do it with all my clients. And I just wanted to ask you a question. So I got on the phone with her and she told me about some of her kids that she's working with and all the things that she wants to do. And she wants to present at the speech pathology conference next year. And she's got all these contacts. And, you know, so there's another, you know, like lucky thing that happened, that this person who's got these contacts and is, you know, a leader in her field. And now she wants to help us.
Yeah, cool. I think that's going to be really valuable to everyone listening when they look at what you've achieved in your career and your view on what you just shared with us. So thank you for sharing that. And your educational background is in biochemistry, is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, I have a bachelor's degree in biology and chemistry, like a joint degree, and then a master's in biochemistry.
Cool. I'm really curious because we get a lot of people on this show and everyone's got their own individual backgrounds, obviously. And we've had people that have come from all walks of life before getting into animal training and doing what they do now. So I'm really curious to learn from everyone what they have brought with them from previous vocations and degrees or learning opportunities. So what do you think you learned when you were studying biochemistry that you've brought with you into what you do with Tag Teach and animal training and that has helped you be successful in that role?
I think probably it's just the way of thinking as a scientist. You know, scientists are very analytical and they want to know why things happen and they want to see the data. You know, and they want to think in an organized way. So I think I've been also lucky in the partners that I've had in the two Teresas, Teresa Lewin, who's with my dog training and dog on crazy partner, and Teresa McKeon, my Tag Teach partner. They're both very unlike me. They have completely different backgrounds and they're the ones that are fun and exciting. And they've kind of been the front people for what we've been doing. And they're the ones that I kind of have to rein in a little bit when it's, you know, some of the ideas get, you know, too big. Or, you know, I'm the one that says, well, wait a minute, why don't we think about this and think about that? So I think we've been like really good partners that way, and that me with my more cautious sciencey approach and them with their, you know, lots of ideas and, you know, being fantastic with people and being able to get those ideas out there and get people all fired up. But I think this, my science background has really helped me in, you know, thinking about planning things out and being organized in my approach. And I like data. So I was really excited to learn about precision teaching and data measurement, which is another thing I think we'll maybe talk about later here.
Yeah, great answer. And I think that's going to be really beneficial for everyone listening. And you mentioned there, you've mentioned a couple of times already, actually, the other Teresa. I don't know what one we can refer to as the other Teresa. There's two Teresas.
Yeah, it's confusing. One with an H. Teresa McKeon with an H. Teresa Lewin without an H.
So with Teresa Lewin, you've shared some stories about doing dog training together. But recently together, you've been, as mentioned in your bio, working on Doggy Detective. Can you tell everyone a little bit more about what that is?
Oh, yeah. That's our dog bite prevention program for school-age children. It used to be called Be a Tree, but we renamed it to be Doggy Detective. We haven't, it's not really recent. I think it's probably even the last 13 years we've been doing that, going to schools. And, you know, we used to run Doggone Safe. And through that, we managed to get lots of presenters, thousands of them in 21 different countries. And the program has been delivered to well over a million children worldwide. So we're pretty proud of that. And now we're kind of starting over with rebranding it, the Doggy Detective, and we're hoping to sort of build that up again.
Well, congratulations, because that's a huge achievement, having that training go out to so many people.
Yeah. My thing I'm most proud of and happy about is the work that's being done in Africa. We had two partners in Africa, both of whom sent me emails. And, you know, you get those emails from Africa and you kind of think, you know, I don't think I had an uncle. I don't think I had a rich uncle in Liberia or whatever. So I was skeptical about these emails. And one of them, his name is Morris Darbo. You know, I looked into his, I asked him for references. And he sent me references from the World Health Organization and Doctors Without Borders and Red Cross or some other big organization. So I phoned the people and checked up on him. And sure enough, this guy's like for real. And so what he's doing in Liberia is just incredible. He's a social worker, and his goal is to teach children empathy, basically, so that the whole of society can change. And instead of having a combative, you know, violent approach to things, everyone will care for each other. So the way he started to do that is through teaching children to have empathy for animals and rescuing dogs and cats and running veterinary clinics. And that's how he got involved with Vets Without Borders. So he somehow found out about our Be a Tree Now Doggy Detective program, and he wanted to do that there. So we sent him some free kits, and then we've also been receiving money for them on their behalf, because it's impossible to send money to Liberia. So if we give Morris $300 US, he will be able to hire someone for 6 months to go into school on his own with his volunteers. He's educated more than 50,000 kids, and they go to all these communities. And so he's making a huge difference, a really huge difference, with almost no money. So, and I still help him out with that. So to me, that's been our biggest, most exciting achievement, is being able to help so many people in Africa.
Yeah, amazing. And I'm curious, when you get started on a project like this, do you have that kind of, I mean, I guess you couldn't really imagine the Africa situation materializing, but did you have a goal when you started Doggone Crazy to educate that many people, or were you just like, hey, let's do this thing, see where it takes us? Like, how do you start out? Where does your mind, what is the first approximation in your mind with regards to your thoughts?
Well, the first thing we did, and we hadn't really thought of going too much further, is we just went to our local school, you know. And it was, Teresa Lewin had been sort of doing it on her own to some degree, and taking her dog into the classroom and showing body language and stuff. And then I got the idea of making these posters. We should make big posters that show the body language, because what I learned from her, I had not known. I had dogs all my life, and I did not know that if a dog yawns when he's not tired, or licks his chops when he's not hungry, or shakes off when he's not wet, that those are signs that the dog might be uncomfortable with the situation, and maybe we should give him some space. And when I learned that stuff from Teresa, I thought, everybody else needs to know this. So we started going to classrooms with these, first with real dogs, and then the dogs would go to sleep, and they weren't much use. So we got these posters, photographs that we took, blown up huge. And we went and showed those to the kids. Here's him yawning, and here's him licking his chops, and, you know, here's how he holds his ears. And so we pointed out these things and taught the kids this body language stuff. And then we had other games and activities that also role playing that go along with it. And we got so many incredible comments back from parents and the kids and the teachers. And thank you so much. You saved my kid's life from the dog bite situation. And like literally that level of, you know, amazing stuff came out of it that we didn't really expect. So then we thought, well, we should get more people to help us. So we made the kit, and we presented it first at the Professional Animal Behavior Associates Conference in Guelph, who were friends of Teresa's and invited us to come, which was nice of them. And then we sold a whole bunch of kits there. And then we thought, you know, if we had a nonprofit, more people would help us. So we started Doggone Safe so that we could get more people to, you know, want to help us spread this message. And that worked really well. So we didn't really plan it. It just kind of grew to one thing and then grew to another thing. We had such a good reaction from the behavior people that come to the PABA conference that we were really encouraged to do more. And then we decided also, we also thought, well, why don't we make a game? Because it was fun. More kids would, you know, want to learn it. So that's how we started making the Doggone Crazy board game. So it all just started with us going to schools, and then you know, we just realized more people need to know this stuff. So then along came the game and the teacher kit. And, you know, the last 10 or more years, we've been, you know, trying to promote things that way.
And what motivates you? Is it the change you're making, or is it, are you someone who's consistently needing and wanting big project ideas to work on? Like, where is your reinforcement? I mean, once again, I feel like this is a silly question, but I want to hear it in your words.
Oh, I do it for the money. Yeah, let's laugh about that. No, I don't know. No, I just like doing, I like new things, and I like things moving forward. And I love the emails that I get from people. So I'm not sure what the moment by moment motivation is. You know, I've just always been self-motivated, and I do stuff. And as long as I'm doing something, I'm fairly happy with it. And then when I kind of get fed up with something, I go do something else. So I used to be the science consultant, and, you know, it was very, very lucrative kind of job, because it was very specialized, working for pharmaceutical companies, helping them get drugs approved, and working for the government, helping them with regulation and like environmental risk assessment, a lot of the Canadian regulations on site decommissioning, and, you know, dealing with the water quality objectives, how many what chemicals are allowed and what levels. A lot of that is stuff that I personally did, and, you know, that was really interesting and exciting. And then at one point I got a new pharmaceutical project, and, you know, a truck comes into my driveway with like 50 boxes, I'm not even exaggerating, of scientific studies for me to read. And it used to be that that would happen, I'd be all excited, oh, new project, and, you know, I can go into the literature and get 500 papers to read and summarize, and then I'm going to read all these, you know, thousands of pages of stuff and look at all this data, and I was excited about that. And then this last batch came, and I'm like, I don't even want to open these boxes. I just looked at them and I thought, I just don't want to do this. So I stopped doing that. By that time, I was already more interested in the dog training. And I love training. The training, the minute-by-minute excitement of training is very, very motivating. You know, which is why I will, if you have a puppy and you want me to babysit your puppy, send me your puppy, you know, for free.
So if you have a project, listeners of this show, and you want it to be successful, just send it to Joan and sell it to her. Because you've kind of shared with us how you think about this, but you got into tag teaching, and then look what that's become. Look what you've achieved with Dog Gone Crazy. And something we're going to talk about now is the next thing that you've latched onto that you're excited about. And we've had kind of one iteration of it this year, and then the Convergence Conference, which we're going to talk about soon. But what before we move on, because I realize we've been on this first subject for half an hour now, when we've got lots of things we wanted to talk about, but I think there's value in this. This is why I'm asking you, what one thing about everything you've shared with us and about what motivates you to invest the time, energy, attention, and hard work into these projects that you have, which have made them become what they have become, what one thing has helped lead you to success more than anything else, would you say?
Oh, what one thing? That's a hard question. These one thing questions are really hard. You're making me work for my money. Yeah, what money? We didn't talk about money, actually, did we? One thing. Geez, I don't know. I mean, I like the idea of being on the forefront of things. And so I find that exciting, to be a leader in a field. And I think I've kind of managed to do that in several fields, just because I think I take an idea and go with it. One thing. Geez, I don't know. You know, I don't even know the answer to that question. Sorry.
No, it's absolutely fine. I think you said it there. I mean, I think that desire to be at the forefront of things, I think, and you made a distinction before between lucky and unlucky people. So maybe it's just having that thing and the self-fulfilling prophecy that comes with that, that you're looking for those opportunities and you take them when they're presented to you.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, the more you go out there and do stuff, the more, you know, luck and people come to you. Like the latest thing I've been doing, five years ago when I was 50, so more than 5 years ago, I decided to learn to sit ski, which is a thing, a bucket that you sit in, and it's got one ski. If you look it up, look up sit ski in X Games, and you'll see like incredible sit ski. Anyway, it's like a pretty high intensity sport, so I decided to do that. So, you know, now I'm, you know, pretty good at that, and I've met all kinds of cool people who are like leaders in the field of, you know, disabled sports and adaptive sports. And so that's another, like, if I had lots of money and I could retire at this moment, that would be my next thing, would be getting adaptive sports to be more well known and to have more programs so that more kids and adults would be able to get out there, especially out into the big mountains in the West. I mean, there's just nothing like it. And being out there and being on the mountain you know, and I would like more people to have that kind of opportunity. So that's going to be my next thing. You know, I'll start hanging out with the people on the national team. And like, I just got invited, I'm going on a ski trip in 2 weeks, and I just got invited to ski with the development team out there for the weekend. So I'm going to do that. So I'll be skiing with the up and coming, you know, next Olympian. So, you know, that'll be cool. Oh, and I met a couple times ago, we were in Banff, happened to meet a guy who's a blind skier. And he's like won like 5 Olympic medals, and we got to ski with him and hang out with him. And, you know, that was cool. So things just happen, you know, if you go out there and do stuff, things happen.
Wow, Jan, you're so lucky.
I am lucky, really. And I'm lucky to have the family that I have too. I mean, my kids are not so lucky the way they grew up, because we worked really hard and I intentionally taught them in a certain way, and they've turned out great. But I'm lucky with the husband that I have, Dave, who supports all these crazy things that I want to do. He's just like, whatever.
Amen to that. Hey, so far this has been so much fun learning about your behavior odyssey. I love doing this. Thank you so much for sharing. We mentioned the Convergence Conference, and so I want to start to talk about the idea behind this and talk about interdisciplinary learning. Specifically, let's start with what human trainers can teach animal trainers, and also flip that on its head, what animal trainers can teach human trainers. Can you speak to these two ideas for us, Joan?
Yeah, thank you. I love this question. So I've been thinking about this for a while, and I'm going to write a blog post about this, because I think there's lots of things, but I'm going to give you my top three from each, because otherwise we could be here all day. So from human trainers, what we have learned from human trainers and what the human trainers can teach the animal trainers, I think one of the top things is the WTF. So WTF for a behavior analyst means what the function, what's the function. So one of the things that the animal trainers, I think, can learn is that when you have an undesirable behavior, we all know that we want to teach an incompatible behavior so that will replace the undesirable behavior. What we've learned from the human trainers is that, if possible, that replacement behavior should serve the same function as the undesirable behavior. So if the dog is doing a bad thing so that he can get attention, then he needs to learn some other way to get attention. So if the dog's jumping all over you, then maybe going and lying on a mat is definitely an incompatible behavior that is not going to serve the same function. So it might be better that instead of jumping, he learns to do some other behavior that's going to garner him some attention right in the moment. So that's sort of an example. The thing that we can learn from the human trainers, which they're super good at, is managing the learning environment to optimize stuff. So we know that the environment is really important in behavior. So they are really good at setting it up so that the learner has the most chance of success. So reducing distractions, making sure that the options are reduced to, you know, what the child or adult is likely to do or can do, you know, and making it so that they have a better chance to succeed. So I think the animal trainers could do better in that. You know, like, you bring all your dogs into a room and train them. That might not be the ideal situation for every one of those dogs. And I've seen some trainers get really creative with that, you know, dividing the room up with dividers and, you know, using other ways of trying to make the environment more conducive to learning for individual animals. The other thing that I think is probably the greatest gift that the human trainers have given us is the importance of measuring and taking data. So, of course, as a scientist, I liked this, and I was excited when I found out that how this data collection and analysis works. And the specific aspect of measuring and taking data that they have given us, which comes straight from Skinner, is measuring rates of behavior as opposed to just percent correct. So measuring what we would call fluency. So I'll just give you an example. So say I did a test and you did a test and Susie did a test and we all got 100% on our test. That seems good. You know, we all did well. Well, it took you 3 hours, took me 5 minutes, and it took Susie 20 minutes. So now you can see there's a difference. If we start looking at the time, time factor, those 100% are not all equal. So if we took number of responses correct in a minute and compared those, we would see that we were all different and I was the best. The other kind of example is, say, we had one child doing math questions, for example, and they're just, you know, filling out addition problems, and they get 100% on the first test, and then they get 100% on the third test, and then they get 100% on the fourth test. And then we think, oh, well, they're all good. We don't need to do this anymore. Or say maybe they get 50% on the first test and 50% on the second test and 50% on the third test. And we think, well, whatever we're doing isn't working. You know, there's no increase here. There's no improvement. Whereas if we were looking at rates and we were seeing that, well, first they got 10 right in a minute, and then they got 20 right in a minute, and then they got 40 right in a minute. But overall, it was they were only getting a 50%, you know, over the whole time or the whole test. We would see the difference. You know, we would see that they're getting them all right or they're getting half right, but the time is changing. So if they were getting faster, even though they weren't getting more accurate, or they're getting 100% every time, but they're getting faster, then we could see that our teaching is actually doing something. And then by the same token, if they could be getting better, but not faster, they could be getting more accurate, but not any faster. And so then is our teaching doing anything? Probably not. So if you look at rates, you get much, much more information about how your teaching is going. And I think that that is something that everybody should consider. So instead of looking at percent correct, we look at number correct in a minute. And that's basically the premise behind precision teaching, which I was very excited to discover. And then the other part of the data collection is the other side of it is the data analysis. So once you have your data, you put it on a graph. And there's a special kind of graph called acceleration chart. And that just gives us a much more accurate way of, not so accurate, but in a way of graphing data that lets us see changes much faster and shows us the magnitude of change. So something that's a small change won't show up, and something that's a big change will show up. So I know it's a little complicated and people get scared when they see these graphs, but they're really not scary. So it's kind of my goal now is to try to get more people thinking about this precision teaching and measuring rates and graphing it on an acceleration chart. So TagTeach is kind of going towards that now. We've presented at a few of their precision teaching meetings and you know, we're on their website. We're on the Chartlytics, which is a company that does a lot of this, and there's tons of free data on their site. They have precisionteachinguniversity.com. So our TagTeach course is on there now, and the behavior analyst can get continuing education credits for taking it. And we're really trying to do more with the precision teaching community and the measurement people. So that's exciting. Okay, so those are the three things that my three tops from the human trainers is considering the function of a behavior when you're replacing a behavior, managing the learning environment to optimize success, and taking data the right way. And on the other side, the animal trainers, I think the greatest gift that the animal trainers have given us is shaping. And if that's a skill that you don't have, get it. And how do you get good at something? You do it, practice it, try it. Anytime you get an opportunity to train something, you train it. So that's how I got good at shaping. And Karen thought I was good enough at shaping to be the person to teach shaping with her at the Clicker Expo. So that was cool. But, you know, I just practiced and train a rabbit or a cat or something that is not amenable to being pushed around. And your shaping skills will improve significantly. So I think that the idea of shaping, how to create behavioral momentum during shaping, you know, by gradually increasing your criteria, and how to teach without, which leads to how to teach without talking or physical prompting. So being able to train without ever touching a person or an animal, there's always a way. And I think the animal trainers have shown us that there's always a way to break it down small enough and build it up in small enough steps that you can teach anything that an animal or person can physically do without ever touching them. And the human trainers and dog and horse trainers can really learn from that, because those three creatures, humans and animals and horses, are much more amenable to being moved around physically and physically prompted because they will tolerate it. Whereas if you try to do a cat or a rabbit that way or a fish, you know, it just won't work. So I think that shaping and everything that goes around with shaping is just the biggest gift. And again, that came from Skinner. He started that along with the measuring rate. Those were his two biggest contributions to the science. The second thing that I think animal trainers have given us is using targets. Using targets is just so powerful. And although it's a prompt, it's a non-physical prompt. And you can just move your training so fast with both people and animals using targets. And not just touching your nose to something or touching your hand to something, but the kind of targets where you could use your hip as a target or eye targeting or elbow or, you know, one that we like to use in tag teach a lot is tape to tape. So we put a piece of tape on a body part and a piece of tape somewhere else, and the tag point is tape to tape. And that's sort of almost magical of targeting. Everybody needs to learn how to use targets. We're going to do a webinar on that, I think, with Emily from Sweden on targeting for parents, and I think. And then the third thing that the animal trainers have given us is marker-based training, so it's just clicker training. And then what we've taken clicker training and turned it into tag teaching. So I think that that's been another huge contribution. And again, straight from Skinner, you know, how to use a conditioned reinforcer and take that conditioned reinforcer and use it to teach new skills is just super powerful. because many times you just can't get that primary reinforcer to the animal or the person fast enough. You know, by the time they do something and then you hand them a treat, they've already done the next thing. So I think that actually marker-based training requires less skill than training without a marker, even though you've got more things in your hand, because you have that time. You know, you can click at the moment that the behavior happens, and then you've got time to fiddle around and get your treat or whatever it is you're using as a primary reinforcer. So those are the three things from the animal trainers, I think, is shaping, targeting, and marker-based training. And I have a big list of other things, but you'll have to wait for my blog post.
Well, thank you so much for that, Joan. Six things to think about, and looking forward to the blog post. Let me know when you release it, and I'll make sure we link it to the podcast episode. So with the humans to the animal trainers, we've got WTF, what's the function? We've got human trainers have given us data collection and managing the learning environment. I didn't do those in the same order that you gave them, but I got there. And I'm interested to learn more about the animal examples that you've seen, maybe, of where we're using acceleration charts. And can you unpack that a little bit for everyone listening? What does an acceleration chart look like? I know I went to the Applied Behavior Analysis conference here in New Zealand this year or last year. I can't remember when exactly, but there was a lot of graphs on the screen, and I was struggling with my experience to really benefit as much as I would have liked from those presentations, because I didn't understand on the level I needed to the graphs. Is shaping not a general part of the application of human training to those people?
Not the shaping the way animal trainers do it. So this sort of like free, what we would call free shaping. I don't think that the human trainers really learn how to do that or think about doing that with people. So of course they shape everything because they have a plan, and we're going to do this. And then once they're doing this, we're going to do that. And then we're going to do the next thing. And so, I mean, all training is basically shaping, because you're building up on what you had before and you're changing it from what it started with to be something else, which is what shaping is. But the way that the animal trainers do shaping with a clicker or even without a clicker to, like, in the moment, you know, shifting criteria slightly as you're training is something that the human trainers, I don't think, do as well as the animal trainers do, if they even realize that that's something that you can do. They tend to be more, like, discrete in their steps. So, you know, let's teach them to hold a pencil a bunch of times till they can hold a pencil, and then let's teach them to do a straight line, and then let's teach them to put, you know, something else on the line. So each part is like very defined, so it doesn't have the fluidity, and it worked perfectly well. I'm not saying it doesn't work or it's not shaping, but it's just not the kind of free shaping and using the person or the animal to guide your next step. I think that's one of the big things that the animal trainers either know instinctively or have been taught, is to sort of watch for the next thing starting to happen and then start reinforcing that. So I have a really good video that is a perfect example with people. So with a little boy teaching the swimming lesson video. I don't know if you've seen that one. I'm not sure if we have that on our public channel. Anyway, I'll give you a link for the show notes. So I'm teaching a little boy to swim or to get in the pool with a life jacket. He's not really swimming, but he doesn't want to get in the pool. First of all, the water was only 70 degrees. So I don't think we mentioned that anywhere in the video. And he also just didn't want to go. So we, you know, tagged him for going to the one step, taking one step into the step of the pool, and then two, and then three, and then four. But I'm watching for him to start to take the next step. So he goes down one step, goes down one step, goes down one step. Then I see him sort of a little bit of momentum going towards the second step. Then I might ask him to go to the second step. Like, I only ask for the next thing when I see it already starting to happen. You know, once he's in the pool, he starts kicking his feet a little bit. So then I make a tag point to kick your feet, because I've already seen that he's going that way anyway. So like taking your cue from the learner as to what the next step is something that I maybe the animal trainers don't even do that much, but it's, I think that's one of the big skills in shaping, is being a good observer and seeing that next step starting to happen and then moving towards it, rather than, you know, say I'm going to do this five times and I'm going to do that five times, you know, and taking like maybe bigger jumps than the learner is able to take. But I don't know, shaping is like a soft skill, I guess you might call it. But it's something that you just have to practice. You know, the more you do it, the better you get at it. And it's really hard to teach it or explain it, because it's something it becomes sort of intuitive, I guess, once you get sort of good at it. You know, that's not such a great answer, but I think that as a whole, and from what I've observed, the animal trainers are the ones that are unbelievably good shapers, those who are good shapers. And from what I've seen from the human side, which I have obviously not seen nearly as much as what's out there, but I have read the part of the textbook that they use. There's a main textbook where it explains shaping. You know, it has a technical definition of about a paragraph, and that's it. And I think really you need to train a cat or a rabbit if you want to be a good shaper, not a person.
I like that answer. I thought it was great. The other two things you said, animal trainers can teach human trainers using target and marker-based training, which obviously you've had a big impact on, or stuff you've done in your career. And two other things you mentioned to me when we called up a while ago was, you alluded to it slightly there, but potentially can unpack it a little bit more, is your thoughts that humans talk too much.
Oh, yeah. Humans talk too much. Everybody talks too much. That's the biggest difficulty that everybody, including me and including Teresa McKeon, has had with tag teach is the talking. You know, we just all want to talk too much. You want to tell everything, you know, like me telling you about the acceleration charts. Like, I know that was like way too much and way too complicated, but then I just get going on it and there you go. And it's not really explainable without being there or seeing the charts, but I'm still talking about it anyway. And that's what we do. We have all this information inside us, and we think it's so important for our learner to know it that we tell everything and we don't want to leave anything out. And it's always too much. If you're an expert in something, what you know is way too much for anybody that you're trying to teach. You know, so you need to break it down and go right back to basics and try to think about how it was for you when you were learning a new thing. You know, like I just learned to ski not that long ago, and man, that was frustrating. You know, not only all the crashing, but just all the details and, you know, my instructor giving me like 10 things to think about, and then I can only think about two of them or one of them, and really only one of them. So I have trained a lot of ski instructors actually to teach me the way I want to be taught. Why, you know, they talk at the top of the hill, and I say, okay, what's the one thing that's most important? And then they tell me that, and then I go, and then I think about only that. And so that, you know, lost where I'm going with that. You know, I think that that's been really useful for me, that experience of being a student. So if you never get an experience of being a learner, go learn something. See, you know, how many instructions you get and, you know, how much detail, and just frustrating. So with tag teach, I think that's the greatest gift that we've given to all our learners, our tag teachers, is a way to minimize your language, get down to the basics and figure out in your mind what it is that you're actually trying to teach, and give your learner just that one thing. So Teresa McKeon made up this thing called the focus funnel. And I think you probably talked to her and she probably told you all about that. So, you know, that's where you have all this huge amount of information that comes in at the top of the funnel, and that's all your teacher knowledge that you have. And then you sort that out in your mind and you figure out, well, what's the instruction I need to give, you know, this time? And then you kick that down further to what's the one thing I want this person to do. And that's your tag point. You take all your knowledge and you funnel it down to one thing. And that's hard. It's hard to do. And it's hard to keep your mouth shut, you know, because you just want to tell them that one more thing. So that's one of the sort of classic tag teacher mistakes that we find people making when they first come to us is, you know, they'll say the tag point is pointed toes, and then they'll keep talking. But don't forget to do this with your hands and start over there. And when I tell you to go, and by the time they've said another 12 things, the person's forgotten what the original thing is they're supposed to focus on. So with tag teach, the very last thing you say to your learner is the tag point is do whatever. And then they do it, and then they get a tag or they don't. And then it's up to them then to decide what they did, what they need to do the next time. They can ask you, of course. But if they don't ask you, then you don't say anything. So there's no corrections. It's all self-correction by the learner, which is super powerful. And it's reinforcing for you as a teacher. The better you get at this, teaching without talking, the more reinforcement you get, because your learners learn faster. You can do more repetitions and you can get paradoxically more information to them in a shorter time if you give them less to do.
More is less, basically.
Yeah, less is more.
More is less. I completely balls it up, didn't I? Less is more. That's what I was trying to say. I love the focus funnel. And I'll definitely want to learn more and improve myself on that. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, so that's an example of me and Teresa working together. You know, like she comes up with these awesome concepts and then we refine it and then we figure out how are we going to get it out there. You know, so that focus funnel is all her thing. You know, so she's amazing. She just comes up with all these like brilliant ways to teach people this stuff and make it visual for people.
She's actually texting me while we're doing this podcast because we had her on a live web class a few days ago. She told us about short phrase coaching.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's another thing that's great. People just love that. You know, you can just take your words down to just the very smallest, you know, one word if possible. Just it's so powerful. It's amazing really how powerful it is to reduce your words. I can't stress enough how powerful that is. Meanwhile, I've been talking for an hour.
Oh, she shared with us in the web class the stop, drop, and roll example.
Right.
And so I sent her a photo from, I was at a doctor's yesterday, and the New Zealand version is, because we've got lots of earthquakes happen here, that we've got drop, cover, and hold. So there was a poster up of that at the doctor's, as well as a more detailed poster above that explaining in more detail what that looks like. But anyway, getting distracted.
Yeah, well, that's like our be a tree. It's stop, hold your branches, watch your roots grow. You know, so it's stop, fold, and watch.
Beautiful. I love this so much. But we are going to move on to talk about something really exciting that we mentioned a couple of times, but we want to unpack even more and share the word about, because it doesn't matter where you are in the world, you can attend this, because you and the team are doing such an amazing job at streaming this live on the internet. And I want to talk about CHAT, C-H-A-T-T, the convergence of human and animal training and technology. Can you? We had Ryan O'Donnell on the show, so we've talked about it a little bit with him, but can you build on our conversation with Ryan and tell us what CHAT is, how it got started, and what we have to look forward to?
Yeah, well, it's exciting. And don't bother about anything Ryan told you. It's all me. It's all my idea. I did everything. I did all the streaming. No, he's amazing. So I met Ryan on the internet. Same place I met Karen. Same place I met Teresa in. So I actually met him on LinkedIn. And I saw that he was doing this conference. Oh, what does he call it? I can't remember what his conference called.
Slips my mind at the moment as well. It's
NextGen.
NextGen, that's it.
The NextGen Revolution Conference. So it's for behavior analysts, and it's sort of like leading edge, who's coming up next, you know, where are we going with our field? And it's also, he has an entrepreneurial bent to it. So it's very different from what other conferences are going on in the behavior analysis world. So I saw something about that, I think on LinkedIn. It was on LinkedIn. And I went to the site and I looked at it and I thought, wow, this is really cool. We need to live stream. And Teresa and I have been talking for a long time about doing something with animal and human trainers, but we've never really figured out how to really do it. So I thought, this guy is the key to this. We need to live stream. We need to do and he's a behavior analyst. We need to do something with the behavior people, the human behavior people and the animal people and technology. So I contacted him and I said, yeah, let's do this thing. So we talked and we talked. Talked every week for a while, starting in November, last November. And then I think in April, we decided, okay, we're going to do this thing. So we got speakers. The speakers just, every single speaker just said yes immediately. It's amazing. Like huge speakers like Ken Ramirez and Joe Lang and Teresa McKeon. And then we started planning the conference. We did it at the zoo. We found an amazing location at the zoo in Seattle. And everybody was excited about that venue. We sold the thing out in like maybe 6 weeks, the in-person conference. In fact, we oversold it a little bit, which is my fault, because we our technology on the registration end wasn't quite exactly right. It's going to be better next year. And then we had 100 people on the live stream, which was amazing. We had a really good team working on the live stream, talking to people, and they had this amazing little community going on there, talking to each other for the 2 days. And people loved the live stream. A couple of people told me that they thought the live stream was better than going to a conference in person, because we had some extra things for the live streamers, and next time we're going to do even more for them. You know, so when there's breaks, we're going to try to have some more interactive stuff for them. Anyway, last year it was amazing, and the speakers were incredible. The technology was flawless. It's the first time I've ever been to a conference that the technology was absolutely flawless, and that's all down to Ryan and his team and his equipment. You know, so he comes with a truck full of stuff and just goes at it. Like, man, it was amazing. And so next year we're doing it in Seattle at the university. It's a bigger room. We have a 400-seat auditorium. This time it's about 200. But it's already going. I think there's 30 people signed up already, and we haven't really started promoting it big time. I've just got a huge, exciting announcement, which I'm going to make right here for the first time, and that's Susan Schneider is coming to do the keynote. Yeah, so pretty excited about that. And then we've got some incredible tag teachers and behavior analysts, animal trainers. It's going to be a really good, really good mixture of exciting stuff. And everybody learned from each other. So Teresa and I have had this, there's been this stigma about animal training and teaching people like animals and don't train my kid like a dog. And we've really struggled over the last 14 years to get past that. And I think like we're finally getting past it, where the human side are starting to see that there's a lot that they can learn from animal training and vice versa. I mean, I didn't know what behavior analysis was. I've never heard of it. Meanwhile, I'm using all exactly the same principles every day in all my training and in my life. But I didn't know that it had a name, or that there was science, you know, good science behind it, and that they were taking data and that they have 50 years worth of data. You know, so I think that's a revelation on both sides. You know, when the animal trainers discover behavior analysis, it's like, wow, like, this is amazing. And when the behavior analysis see what the animal trainers can do, they're blown away. You know, and they see immediately that there's many things that they could apply in their own teaching that the animal trainers have developed, you know, like the targeting. You know, like a lot of them have never even thought of it or heard of it. You know, just put a sticker there and the person touches the sticker, like, bingo, you've got your behavior.
And so this kind of my main question I have from everything you just added, apart from the fact that there's a comment, not a question, that Susan Snyder is coming, that's amazing. The final question for this episode is, where do you want to see all of us going over the next 5 to 10 years? And that's also just what I'm wondering from the feedback you got there. And I know we've talked about what human trainers can teach animal trainers and vice versa. What's your vision for convergence, for what we've been talking about? Where do you see this combining of skills and professions taking us, and how is, you say we've finally gotten past this potential hurdle of the stigma surrounding using markers, clickers, etc. with humans. How do you see all of this evolving and the convergence role in all of this?
Well, I'm excited about the whole convergence thing, and you know, Ryan and Teresa and I are wanting to build a whole brand around that, and we've got all kinds of exciting ideas. But I think in the next 5 years, I'd like to see much more animal training people talking to human training people and going to each other's conferences and appreciating the incredible things each is doing and the way that they're applying the science. I mean, the science is exactly the same. And most of us are most of the time on the positive side, where if you positively reinforce a behavior, that behavior will increase. And if a behavior is ignored, that behavior will decrease. Like, those two parts are the key. And it's so simple. Like, I've just said it. So why doesn't everybody go and do it? Why do we need to have a conference? And why have we had, you know, 100 clicker expos? And why do we have all these books when it's so simple and that's all there is to it? I don't really know. But what I'd like is for these two fields to get together, and also for the technology side of it. There's so much incredible technology. And I think we need to support that and use it and find out what it is and see how it can benefit. You know, there's sort of two parts to it. There's the individual behavior, and there's sort of group and society behavior, and there's all kinds of exciting things going on with artificial intelligence, how that sort of big data is being used and can be used for good in society. And then there's also the other side of it. But I think people need to be educated about that stuff and how it's, you know, where it's going and how we can contribute. And there's a lot of animal training data out there that's nowhere, that's in people's minds and on people's computers. Like, there's no central place. So it would be cool if eventually people start taking data and putting it somewhere where it can be analyzed and we can find out, like, what works best. What works with best with a Great Dane in Florida at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you know? Like, there is going to be that ability to do that kind of stuff if the data was being put somewhere. Well, that's probably a long way off. But in the shorter term, like in those next 5 years, I think that it would be amazing if we could have more convergence of human and animal training and more people going across, you know, like, write your articles and send them into the behavior journals, or people write your articles and send them to the animal journals. You know, there's no reason why some of these things can't apply, you know, across, because it's the same, all the same principles. So I think that's what I'd like to see, is more of that. And I think when more of that starts happening, then more will spread into the wider community, which is obviously all of our goals. Have positive training be the thing that people use, the people go to, that's your go-to, as opposed to that's what you do when it's your last resort. You know, like that lady who called me the other day, who's an amazing speech pathologist. She said, oh, I've got this one little boy and he sticks his tongue out all the time, so he can't do his therapy because he has his tongue out all the time. So we talked about ways to, she could change that. But that's where she wants to start. And I'm like, no, you need to start with your easy kids, and start with something easy for your easy kids, so that you get good and you get some reinforcement for yourself and get your, you know, build up your skills, and then try the harder thing. And with the child that's has a bigger problem for you to deal with, start with something easy for him. So for some reason, people see this, it is amazing and it will solve your biggest problems. But why do we wait until we have a big problem before we use the most effective way to train? It's a big mystery to me. And people, animal trainers do it, and human trainers do it, and parents, you know, as soon as they have a big problem, then they start finding what's the most powerful way to solve it, and they find this kind of training. And then they want to use it for that. Instead of just using it all the time in all your life for all your training, you only want to use it when it's something that can't be solved any other way. So still, punishment and correction are the first thing that people will try. And then when that doesn't work, they will find something else, and it's this. What I would like to see overall is that positive reinforcement becomes the thing that people go to first instead of the thing that they use as a last resort.
Love it. And great vision for the future and so much tidbits, takeaways, information, starting approximations for people on their learning journeys to go out and find more information in this episode today. Hey, Joan, just before we do officially wrap up, can you just tell everyone where they can go to do just that, further their learning after listening to this episode? Where can they go to find out more about Convergence, about TAG, about you, get in touch? What's the best way?
Well, come to our conference because it's going to be amazing. Come if you're online and come if you can come in person. It's even better. We're going to do all kinds of cool stuff. So the link for that is convergenceconferences.com. You can also find that on tagteach.com in the events section. What was the other thing you were asking me? Sorry, ask me again. Oh, yeah, joan@tagteach.com. Yeah, so everything's on the tagteach.com site, contact information, and you know, that's probably the best place to start. And you can find out about Convergence on convergenceconferences.com. And I also didn't mention, if you're in the autism world, our best resource is Martha Gabler's website, which is autismchaos.com. So that'll all be in the show notes, right?
Yeah, we'll include all that in the show notes. And Doggy Detective as well?
Oh, yes, Doggy Detective. So that's at dogoncrazy.ca.
All right, perfect. And we'll, like you said, include all of that in the show notes for this episode. We are sadly at the end now. Joan, thank you so much for taking time to come and hang out with us on the show today, for connecting with me a couple of weeks ago while playing with technology, getting ready for the episode, all the emails back and forth. We really appreciate you making time for this, I think, and for everything that you're doing for, I want to say, the world. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. It was my pleasure. Hopefully we can do it again sometime when I've got some new stuff.
Awesome. And that's probably like a month from now.
No, I don't know. No, I'm going on a ski trip.
Oh, awesome. Hey, everyone listening, we appreciate you tuning in today as well and spending time with us. If you have enjoyed this episode and you were interested in carrying on the conversation about working with our animals and humans in the most positive, funnish, choice-rich ways. And as mentioned at the start of the episode, the Animal Training Academy community is waiting for you. Head on over to www.animaltrainingacademy.com and click on the membership button in the main menu to learn more about what members are describing as the Netflix social media platform for behavior nerds. There is something there for absolutely everyone. We are looking forward to having you join the tribe. That's it for this episode, though. We are going to wrap it up there. Thanks again so much, everyone, for listening. You'll hear from us again soon.